Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Why Can't I Drink Like Everyone Else? A step-by-step guide to understanding why you drink and knowing how to take a break. By Rachel Hart. Narrated by Anna Caputo. Publisher's note. In this audio edition, you will hear references to charts present in the print and ebook formats of the book. The content of this book does not provide medical advice and is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. The information contained in this book, irrespective of the language in which it is written, shall not be construed as medical advice, implied or otherwise. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health professional with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Information contained in this book is intended to be used for educational purposes only and is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Author's note. As you go through this book, you'll notice that I don't use the labels alcoholic, addict, sober, or recovery to describe my story. Throughout college in my 20s, alcohol was a source of a lot of fun and a lot of problems in my life. During this period, I had an on-again, off-again relationship with drinking. For too long, I struggled on my own because the only help and resources I could find required wearing a label for the rest of my life, and that didn't feel right. I don't believe it makes sense to divide the world into normal drinkers and alcoholics. This black and white thinking leaves a lot of people who don't feel like they belong in either camp out in the cold. The way people use and interact with alcohol changes over time and in different contexts. Labels don't reflect these kinds of ebbs and flows or the different degrees of struggle. Labels reduce a complex, multifaceted person into a single behavior. Some people find labels empowering. Other people find them stigmatizing, especially when a predominant cultural narrative connected to a specific label is rife with stigma, shame, and stereotypes. In my case, I don't identify as an alcoholic, sober, or recovered. These labels aren't useful for me, or an accurate reflection of my journey. Ultimately, it's up to you to decide what feels right, and go from there. Addiction is real. This book is not for people who are addicted, non-functioning, or need medical attention. Introduction. My brain had to be missing an off switch. I don't remember when I decided this was the reason I took things too far when I drank, but it was the only plausible explanation I could come up with. Once I finished that first drink, I almost always wanted another. The signal inside of me that was supposed to tell me to quit while I was ahead didn't work properly. Can you relate? If a little is good, more must be better. At least that's how it seems your brain is wired. Maybe you've even noticed that the desire to overdo things isn't unique to alcohol. For me, smoking really fast and eating too much too quickly were right up there with guzzling a beer. Why is that? Why can't you be more like your best friend who knows when to call it a night? Why don't you drink like everyone else? You know you could stop drinking entirely. You don't need to drink. But why would you want to? Drinking is just what people do. And it's fun. A lot of fun. It's a recipe for a good time. A part of every celebration. After a couple of drinks, you can let your guard down and the conversation flows. For a little while, you can forget about life and relax. With a little bit of a buzz going, you're not worried about what people think. You're not wrapped up in self-doubt. It's one of the few times you're not stuck in your head, overthinking everything. You're just enjoying yourself. In college, getting drunk was a rite of passage. It gave you the permission you needed to be crazy and wild and even a little reckless. It dialed up your bravery. You didn't know what the night would bring, and that was the whole point. You and your friends took turns taking care of each other when one of you took things too far. The next day, you would compare notes, nursing hangovers while you pieced together the night. This was a normal part of growing up, and you were all for having your fun while you still could. Someday, you'd be old and boring and saddled with responsibilities. But thankfully, you still had time. As you grew up, so did your drinking. Red plastic cups turned into fine stemware and weighty tumblers. You compare Cabernets to Pinots. You don't just ask for gin. You request Hendrix. Sticky sweet concoctions gave way to master mixologists and cocktails named Death in Venice. Your drink selections are now a marker of who you are. Drinking is still fun. Now, it's also sophisticated. Plus, it's a reliable break from always having to be so responsible all the time. Some days, you can't wait to get home, so you can pour yourself a glass and finally take the edge off. Still, something doesn't feel quite right. Drinking has a pull on you that you don't understand and you don't like to acknowledge. That off switch of yours, after all this time, it's still unpredictable. Even though the way you drink has changed, you can still find yourself drinking more than you planned. Your tally of next day regrets is growing. Everyone says and does stupid things when they're drunk. Everyone has nights they wish they could take back. But shouldn't you have grown out of this by now? Things that were funny in college now make you wince. Waking up with the same stupid repercussions over and over again has become tiresome. Obviously, you've already tried to figure this out on your own. You've devised solutions to rein yourself in, deciding how many drinks you'll have before going out, only drinking on certain days, spacing out drinks or alternating with water, drinking only on a full stomach, drinking only certain types of liquor, or keeping pace with a friend who's less likely to go overboard. Sometimes they work. Other times, it's a disaster. Maybe you've heard that if you can't control how much you drink, it's because you have a disease. You should admit that you're powerless over alcohol and attend meetings for the rest of your life. But even the thought of having to assume a label to explain your struggle makes you feel terrible and has you running in the opposite direction. You want to change, but a life without alcohol looks miserable. What would you do while everyone else is out drinking? Who would you hang out with? What if you're still on the dating scene? How would you meet people? What if going out for drinks is the cornerstone of your social life? The last thing you want to be is the awkward person in the corner ordering club sodas from here on out. Maybe you've even quit before, and your fears were confirmed. You appreciated waking up clear-headed, but nothing else about being sober was fun. You want to solve this problem, but you don't know how. I know what it's like to feel stuck. I wrote this book because when I was struggling to understand why I drank the way I did, I couldn't find anything else like it. Everything I found required that I admit to being an alcoholic and wear a label for the rest of my life. I didn't want to sign up for a framework that said I was powerless or focused on defects of character. If the 12 steps work for you, keep doing what you're doing. But if they don't resonate, it doesn't mean you're in denial or not trying hard enough. There are 7 billion people on this planet. The idea that a single solution exists for everyone never made sense to me. There's more than one way forward. This book will teach you the tools that helped me, the same ones I use every day with my life coach clients. You won't ever hear from me that you must stop drinking, or that you'd really be better off if you did, or that cutting out alcohol will magically solve all your problems. The decision about whether you want to drink will always be yours, and yours alone. Certainly, when I was torn about what to do, no amount of pleading or cajoling or harsh words could have persuaded me to change. I needed to decide what was right for me on my own. What I will promise is this. It's possible to get to a place where drinking no longer has a pull over you, and you won't feel like you're missing out. If you're rolling your eyes right now, I get it. When this was my struggle, I would have heard a statement like that and told myself the person writing it was either crazy or fooling herself or both. But I probably would have also kept on listening, albeit skeptically, because I was frustrated that my drinking was still the source of so many of my problems. I was tired of waking up in the morning, trying to piece together the previous night, and worried about what I had said or done. I was embarrassed. I just wanted my drinking not to be an issue. More than anything, I wanted an answer to the question that plagued me. Why can't I drink like everyone else? This book will help you understand this question as it relates to you and show you how to shift your relationship with alcohol so that you can get to a healthier and happier place. Let's get started. 1. My story. From hangups to hookups. I still remember my first college party. Well, that's not entirely true. I remember how it began. Days earlier, I had arrived at my dream school. Wellesley, a women's college on the outskirts of Boston, has a long and storied reputation of producing women who shatter glass ceilings and make their mark on the world. It wasn't just my top choice, it was the only college I applied to. I worked my butt off in high school to secure a spot because more than anything else, I wanted to be one of those women. In high school, I had no problem sitting in the front row of class or raising my hand. Academics were one thing. Socializing was another. I was as outspoken in the classroom as I was uncomfortable socially. I bounced around friend groups, never quite fitting in. Standing in a darkened gymnasium during a school dance was excruciating. The dichotomy between my behavior couldn't have been more stark. Confident in one setting, and a ball of insecurity in the other. While I didn't have much experience with partying or alcohol in high school, I had a lot of experience feeling out of place. College was my chance for things to be different. Walking down Beacon Street in Boston toward that first party, I knew I was not off to a good start. My insides felt just as they had on car rides to high school dances. I couldn't tell if I needed to pass out or run to the bathroom. I had zero game plan for that party. Would there be alcohol? Would I drink? What would I do if someone offered? I just remember hoping that things would finally feel different. High school was over. I was in college now. far away from the person I didn't want to be. My first days of college had gotten off to a good start, and I prayed that all my social hang-ups from high school wouldn't follow me. But walking toward that party felt like deja vu. Standing in the darkened room, I realized how wrong I had been. Distance hadn't changed me. I was still the same Rachel I had been in high school. And at that moment, I wanted to disappear. Looking around, I didn't understand how everyone else appeared so at ease. My whole body was fighting the urge to run, while my insides knotted tighter. Nothing about my body felt right. It was as if I was suddenly missing the instructions on how to stand or where to put my hands. I kept looking at the other women for cues about what I should be doing. Maybe I could slip away and take the bus back to campus and no one would notice. But then I found my solution. I don't know what was in that punch, but it was sweet enough to mask the sting going down, and that was good enough for me. It wasn't even the buzz that felt good at first. It was the relief of having something to do with my hands. It may sound odd, but holding a drink gave my body a purpose. I felt awkward and exposed standing there. With a drink in my hand, I had a task. Something to hold, something to drink, something to refill. As my body figured out its purpose, the warm sensation that started in my chest moved to my head. With it, the scene before me transformed. I stopped searching for an escape route and started thinking that the party could be fun. This wasn't my first experience drinking. In the months before college, I had tried alcohol on 3 occasions, but in much smaller settings. Each time with only a handful of people I already knew, in spaces that felt more contained and where my anxiety wasn't in full swing. This time was different. I was a ball of nerves until, suddenly, I wasn't. If this was how alcohol made me feel, then sign me up. Who knows how many times I filled my cup that night, but soon enough my buzz turned into a full room tilt. I stumbled from one room to the next, hunting for a place to sit down. The next thing I remember, one of the women I had come to the party with was shaking me awake, insisting that we had to catch the last bus home. Next to her, looking concerned, was a very tall, very handsome guy. Before I had time to be humiliated for passing out on a couch at my first college party, he had his arm around me and was helping me to my feet. Despite being wasted, part of me was still able to take in the scene. An extremely attractive man was, for some unknown reason, holding me close and wanting to walk me to the bus stop to make sure I got home okay. Months earlier, a guy like this wouldn't have given me the time of day. But that night, the roles had reversed, and he seemed concerned. Things had changed. Looking back on that early encounter with alcohol, I wonder if my belief that things had gone so well at that first college party contributed to how my drinking would go so wrong later on. I don't for a second wish that something bad had happened to me that night, because, let's be honest, far too often on college campuses, something does. But the lesson I learned at that party was one I would repeat over and over again during those 4 years and throughout my 20s. Feel uncomfortable? Out of place? Awkward? Just drink as quickly as possible until the feeling goes away, even to the point of losing control. Alcohol became the perfect remedy to fix how I felt on the inside. the insecurity that gnawed at me before going out disappeared. The hang-ups whispering in my ear dissolved. Drinking became part and parcel of meeting guys. When I drank, the woman I wanted to be stepped forward. Outgoing, fun, and sexy. During the week, I put my nose to the grindstone. But once the weekend rolled around, I was ready to become the Rachel I wanted to be. If I was worried about my behavior in college, I rarely let it show. I certainly wasn't going out and getting drunk on my own. Sure, I overdid it sometimes, but so did everyone else. I told myself that getting wasted every weekend was normal. Anyway, drinking was the only time I felt confident and attractive, and I saw absolutely no reason to mess with a good thing. Hangovers, well, sometimes nasty, were still easy to shake off. That's not to say I was completely oblivious to the downsides. At times, I worried that alcohol was turning into a crutch when it came to socializing. The more I needed it to feel at ease, the more I tended to go overboard. I also wasn't sure how I felt about the fact that all my romantic relationships seemed to start when I had one too many. Deep down, I wasn't always comfortable with my drunken antics, but I almost never let myself really dwell on these thoughts. My solution was to find a way to laugh about it and move on. It wasn't until I moved to New York City after graduation that I had to face that something was not right with my drinking. Getting blackout drunk in the relative safety of my women's college was one thing. Getting blackout drunk in a city of 8 million people was another. Less than 2 months into my first real job, an after-work celebration with coworkers spiraled into being wasted, alone, and lost in a city I barely knew. This wasn't stumbling around a picturesque college campus anymore. This was getting incapacitated in the real world. My memories are hazy at best, but despite making my way back to my neighborhood, I was so turned around and so intoxicated that all I could do was sit down on the curb to cry. I awoke sometime later, having no idea how long I had been there, and realizing I had passed out next to a car, alone at night, on the streets of Manhattan. Unharmed, but scared by my behavior, it suddenly seemed that the normal makings of countless crazy nights in college were actually reckless and stupid. I promised myself I would try to moderate, but I knew that wasn't really something I was good at. A few short weeks after my 22nd birthday, I decided it was time to stop altogether. This terrified me, but I made up my mind that enough was enough. I was sick of my behavior. I was tired of waking up and piecing together the previous night's events. The antics that I wrote off as the makings of a good story in college weren't so funny anymore. Something had to give. The problem was, I had no idea who I was without a glass in my hand. Sure, I knew who I was when it came to work. Give me an assignment and a deadline, and I would get it done. No problem. But socializing was another story. I felt like an enigma, even to myself. I was 17 at the first college party, and from that point forward, alcohol was by my side whenever it came to having fun. Being underage barely mattered. There was always a way to get drunk. When I turned 21 during my senior year of college, it was only really notable because I could now go do in the open what I had done every weekend behind closed doors. Get wasted. For me, alcohol was a crutch that I didn't know how not to need. The real me was hidden behind a blur of alcohol, and I wanted to meet that woman. When I summoned the courage to tell some of my close friends, They looked at me quizzically. I didn't dare tell people until I had a month of not drinking under my belt. First and foremost, I was terrified of failing. Most people were cautiously supportive, but I always got the same question. How long would my enforced sobriety last? In retrospect, I think they didn't get it. Everyone we knew drank a lot. But to be fair, I was just as confused as they were. I didn't need alcohol to get through the day. I wasn't tippling from a secret flask. I drank socially. I drank at parties. I drank at bars. I drank a lot, but so did every 20-something around me. Still, I was secretly worried that I kept taking things too far. Other people seemed to get to a point in the night when they called it quits. My off switch didn't function properly. The attempts I made at moderating were hit and miss, and quitting seemed like the only way. For an entire year, I stopped drinking. I must have turned down 1,000 drinks while I tried to navigate the social scene in New York. I went out. I went to parties. I went to bars. I even started dating someone, all without a drink in my hand. I woke up without hangovers, no longer lying in bed wondering what embarrassing things I had said or done the night before. Now that I didn't need to recover from a night of hard partying, I was insanely productive on the weekends. Here's the part when I'm supposed to tell you that quitting was the best thing I ever did. That when I stopped drinking, all my problems went away? Well, not exactly. The problem was, I didn't particularly like the woman I discovered. She had so many flaws, so many things to fix. She was terrified of failing and obsessed with measuring up. She hated how she looked in the mirror and hated that she relied on attention from men to feel attractive. In a city as full of people as New York, she felt totally alone. Now that my life was in focus, all I could see was a litany of problems that I had no idea how to tackle. That entire year, I kept circling back to the same question. If I'm this screwed up, why not just start drinking again? Then at least I'd have a little relief. On top of everything else, I was exhausted by being the odd man out among friends. I was tired of having to constantly explain myself and answer people's questions about why I wasn't drinking. I was sick of rebuffing well-meaning friends who asked if I could make an exception just this once because it was New Year's or someone's birthday or they had just purchased the most amazing bottle of wine. I kept turning them down, but inside, I desperately wanted to go back to being like everyone else. Finally, a year after I said no for the very first time, I didn't want to do it anymore. So I started drinking again, and I put almost no thought into it. A friend was visiting from out of town, and I decided I was sick of being different. I was sick of being the sober girl. I was sick of being a bore. I was sick of everything. Without saying a word, I marched into the kitchen of our shared apartment and grabbed a beer from the fridge, cracked it open, and gave myself some long-awaited relief from the tyranny of being me. Throughout my 20s, I would repeat this pattern over and over again, flip-flopping between periods of drinking and not drinking, all the while frustrated that I couldn't seem to make headway. I just wanted to be a normal drinker. But as time wore on, it seemed like my behavior stood out more and more. When my friends were still on their first glass, I was finishing up my second. I was usually the first one to flag down the waiter or head to the bar for another round. If a friend said she was done for the night, I tried to talk her into having one more. At the same time, drinking was everywhere and part of everything. I was convinced that unless I moved to a cabin in the woods, I could never avoid it. Plus, I had quit before and was miserable. I wasn't fun when I was...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?